scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. Happy Monday, friends. Welcome to June. It is Monday, June 2nd, and we're underway this hour on Flamestock, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text lines open at 960-960, of which will be of consequence a little bit later on this hour. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Steinberg, and look who's back after a month abroad. It's Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, fresh back from the World Championship in Denmark and Sweden. Hello, Vicks. Welcome back to Flames Talk.
How many... Oh, you went to Worlds jokes. Are you going to make this hour or next hour?
This hour, maybe not. Like Wes, I think Wes and I got a good.
Did you get some runway out of it?
Good, and even Logan got in on it.
Okay.
We got some good.
Okay.
I
listened to everything, so I know exactly what's going on that.
Yeah, we got a decent amount.
I subscribe to the podcast.
Thank you.
You should too. The royal you. I know you, Pat Steinberg, do.
Shan doesn't.
Oh.
He refuses to listen.
And we refuse to listen to him.
Shan's back too. Shan, Cam. Our producers this hour, and it is good to have Vicks back, and the timing just works out really well, because as we get June underway, this week is Combine Week in Buffalo, New York. A little bit later on this week, we'll check in from the Combine. Craig Conroy and the hockey ops staff, some of the amateur scouting staff out in Buffalo for the week-long Combine, which is Buffalo's basically turned the Combine into their event. They do it there every year, and they're back there this year for the 2025 NHL Draft. So it's Combine Week. It's also NHL Draft Month as, it'll be 3 weeks from Friday when we hit the NHL Draft. That's how close we are up on it. And here we are on June 2nd, the 2025 NHL Draft Guide from FC Hockey is out right now, all put together by our buddy Aaron Vickers over at Future Considerations and FC Hockey, the rest of his collaborators and contributors. And your FC Hockey 2025 NHL Draft Preview is available at NHLEntryDraft.com. And it is time for our Flames Talk FC Hockey 2025 NHL Draft Preview. How does that sound?
That sounds perfect to me, because I know nothing about what's going on in the real hockey world.
Just about
the draft.
The World Championship and the draft. That's all you got.
As I understand it, we're rewinding it back 360 some odd days and just running back the final.
Yes. Okay. So everybody is cheering in this city for the Florida Panthers again. Matthew Tkachuk went from public enemy number like 4 to...
Does he give another Flames shout-out, Calgary shout-out, do you think?
We sure hope so, okay. Because that means that the wrong team doesn't win.
All right, I'm caught up.
Yeah, there you go. That's all you need to know. By the way, tell us a little bit about the FC Hockey Draft Guide, where you can get it, what comes with it, and how you can get 40% off the FC Hockey Draft Guide for 2025.
Here's the quick elevator pitch. Surf on over to NHLEntryDraft.com. Click guide in your top right-hand corner. Check out. Use promo code SN960. Save yourself 40%. That's 40% site-wide, so if there's a subscription, a membership you want as well, you'll get 40% off of that. What we have in the draft guide, and I apologize to your printer if you've ran it off. I'm not sure if you have yet. I know you will. You always do, and you always provide me a copy, which is great. Expanded profiles this year. So we've got longer individual profiles on the top 200 players, a top 300 ranking, our scout survey where we poll our scouts and say, okay, this guy impressed, this guy disappointed, this guy surprised. We've got deep dives on all 5 of the top prospects we've got ranked, as well as a couple others. We've got a look at 2026 as well this year with a deep dive on Gavin McKenna. I'm not sure if anybody has heard of him or is pulling for the Calgary Flames to tank for that certain individual, but we got a deep dive on him as well. And a few other hidden gems, we'll say, in there as well.
Well, and we're going to dive in on the draft class here very shortly. And in the second half of this hour, on your hour-long 2025 NHL draft preview with FC Hockey and Aaron Vickers, we're going to do a little bit of a mini mailbag or ask Aaron anything. Little AAA. Ask Aaron anything. Oh. 960, 960. So if you got a question about this year's draft class for the second half of the hour, get it in right now at 960, 960. We'll get to as many of your draft questions as we can. The Flames have the 18th overall selection as of right now, and either the 31st or, fingers 32. Crossed, 32nd overall selection. So the Flames will have two first-round picks. We'll get to what might be available there. And any of your questions at 960, 960, get them in on the 2025 NHL draft class. Okay, Vic, so how strong is this draft? When you've been, and you've been putting the FC Hockey Draft Guide together for, you know, decade plus now.
Since 2008.
So we're going on two decades of putting the FC Hockey Draft Guide together. So you've always got a really good idea of the relative strength of each draft class. You know, obviously it was a couple of years ago that everybody looked at that 2023 class as extremely strong. The 2024 draft class was thought to be maybe not as strong top to bottom, but still had the good high end. How would you kind of summarize the 25 draft class?
If I'm being honest, I'd just be like, eh, it's there. It's definitely going to happen. It's definitely a draft class.
Okay.
Is it as strong as some of the ones we've seen in the past? No. And I think the thing that I struggle with most in trying to put an adjective or determining what this class is, maybe it's the pessimism in me, but a lot of the players in and around the top 10, whether you're talking about, let's say five, no, let's go six, because I really like Porter Marton. We have Porter Marton at five. From six to beyond, I can see something in each player where I personally go, okay, that's going to limit him to being a second liner. That's not franchise defining. This player is going to be a nice complementary piece, but it's not necessarily something you build around. Now, I'm saying that at 18, and just because what I personally see you as an 18-year-old doesn't necessarily mean that's what you are at 21, 22, 23. And there'll be players in the back half of the first round or the second round or the fourth round or the seventh round, like there always is, that somehow finds a way to develop and pop. Just because of where you're selected on draft day does not dictate who or what you are as a player. It might dictate how much opportunity you get within a certain organization, but a lot of the runway, a lot of the development, the majority of the development, I would say, falls in the hands of development teams, whether that's the Flames, whether that's another NHL team, to mold these players. But there's a handful of players I get excited about. But that doesn't necessarily mean, okay, that's going to be a franchise player. That's going to be a top line player, or a top pair defenseman, or a number one goalie. I've just got maybe the best way to phrase it for me right now is I've got more questions about guys than answers. And in 5 years, if this draft ends up being one that blows it out of the water and individual players exceed my expectations, I can still see a path for those players that I have questions about hitting their peak potential. Just as I'm sitting here right now and looking back compared to past seasons, to me, it's just overall not as deep.
So, and this will help us get into, because in this market, there's a lot of intrigue about what the Flames are going to do with their two first-round picks. It'll be the second consecutive draft. The Flames have multiple first-round picks, at least as we're talking right now. So, and every year we talk about those ledges, right? Those areas where it's a grouping of players, and then at that next step, and maybe the grouping of players drops in caliber a little bit, so on and so forth. So where do we see the ledges in this year's draft, specifically in round number one?
For me, I see one and two with Schaefer Misa kind of being in its own category. That's not to say the Islanders might not take Hagans, who we have number three. He's sort of the hometown kid. So for all intents and purposes, I'm just going to say kind of one to five, nothing would shock me what happens in there. And those five that we have are Schaefer, Misa, Hagans, Desnoyer, and Porter Marton. Then I look, and from six to around 11, 12-ish, I find to be another ledge. And then 13 to about 19, 21, 22, somewhere in there. And then you get the back half of the first round. Then you can extend, you know, 23 to 40, 23 to 50. Okay. There's a lot of, I don't want to say infighting, there's a lot of discussion in getting our order right in terms of what we feel comfortable with on our end. And you can check that out again at nhlentrydraft.com/rankings. There's a lot of, okay, but this guy versus this guy, and then it becomes that guy versus that guy, and player X versus player Y. For me, once you get past that maybe 21 range, you're really just picking the player like individually when we're having our conversations, because we've got, you know, 20 to 25 scouts globally that get in-ring views, get video views. That's our process, so on and so forth. And it's a collaborative effort. It isn't just me sitting here ranking players. We've got, you know, 20 plus staff members that weigh in, that have seen players live, that have seen players a lot on video. But once you get past, for me, that 21 to 23-ish range, that's when you start placing your order and who's yelling the loudest about their player.
So that leads really nicely into where the Flames are slotted to pick right now. Get your text in right now for the second half of the hour at 960-960 as we will get your text in the second half of the hour here on our Flames Talk NHL Draft Preview. So you kind of had number 18 in your third ledge there, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So how much of a difference between the second grouping and the third grouping would you see? Like how close would the groups be in your eyes?
There's a bigger gap between one and two in my mind than there is two and three.
Okay.
And like looking, I'm going to pick on a couple of individuals just as examples. We have Cullen Potter at number 9, played at Arizona State, small player, skews winger. He's only 5'10", 170 pounds. If you watched any U18, he was probably in whatever highlight pack that you saw. I can see a case where he is a top line player in the NHL. I can see a place where he tops out as a third liner and has to reconfigure his game. And that, we're talking about what we project as a top. I shouldn't even say we project as a top 10 pick. Our ranking isn't a projection. It isn't a mock draft. It's how if we had a seat on the draft floor and the top 8 players are off the board,
right,
we're going Cullen Potter. Now, we go down our list a little bit, and you say at number 17, we've got Cole Reschne out of Victoria. He's a player that we feel, not best case scenario, but most likely scenario, he becomes a second line center. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that there isn't a path for him to be a first liner or 1B center or however you want to look at it. So in a sense, we're splitting hairs a bit. And again, it goes back to what I said. And when you asked about, okay, well, how do you quantify the quality or qualify the quality of this draft? It's, you can make cases for and against players pretty easy. So when we're talking that second tier, yeah, there are names I'd feel more comfortable pointing to and saying they're more likely to reach their potential, and their potential is probably a little bit more high end, but you can get into that third tier and point to players and go, well, that guy could be a number one defenseman still. That's sort of, now, what's the likelihood? Probably less than that second tier, but there's still a path for these players to be one of those guys. It's just going to depend on the development team, and it's going to depend on the player himself.
So I asked that because, so where the Flames are at 18, there could be motivation to maybe trade up a few picks because I've, you know, whether it was Steven Ellis when he joined us a number of weeks ago, last week Scott Wheeler stopped by from The Athletic, the feeling that the Flames are a few picks out of that next group. So they're at 18 right now, and if a certain player they want might be in that group just ahead of them, maybe you only have to trade up from 18 to 15 to get the type of guy that you're looking for. And that's why I do wonder this year, and again, I'm not the expert here, so this is based on what the experts have said and what I've heard and read from the people who know far more than I do, but it feels like maybe this year there's a more of a chance that we do see a move-up scenario, which we haven't seen from the Flames in quite some time. Like, we've seen them move
slide
down.
Back, yeah.
We've seen them, I mean, what, the year they drafted Connor Zary,
they
slid
twice.
I believe they just stood pat with Matt Coronato the year they drafted him. But, yeah, we've seen them move back before, but to jump up from where they are on the first round a little bit, it's been a little while, but it feels like maybe there's a possibility that could be in the cards this year.
Yeah, if they do that, what that would scream to me is there's a player on their board that's very clearly, there's no more grouping. We hear Craig Conroy talk a lot when we talk to him about the draft. Okay, we've got a collection of players, maybe it's 3 or 4 or 5 players in the same sort of tier that they have internally. Well, if you're at pick 14 and there's still 4 of those guys left, or 50 and there's still 4 of those guys left, you're guaranteed to get one. Perhaps you don't make that move and you see if there's a surprise ahead of you, or you just let the chips fall where they may and you still end up with a guy that you have basically on a parallel tier with the other guys. If you jump up in this draft, it's because you've identified a player that's above the tier where you project will fall to you.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be proactive in making a move to ensure you get that player. To me, our draft board and what Steven Ellis has and what Scott Wheeler has is going to look very different from what 32 teams don't go to the draft floor with the exact same draft.
No.
So a player that the Flames have rated at 7 might be rated by another team at 28 and vice versa. So if you're on the draft floor and you're seeing your guy that you have at 7 still there and you're drafting at 18 and you're like, oh, I don't know how much further this guy's going to fall. And suddenly he's available still at 14. Then you pull the trigger and make that move and you move up and secure the guy. And then you get the cliched quote, but it's, we couldn't believe this player was available to us. That is, that's part of the biggest cliche at the draft, but part of it is true too, especially when you see a team move, reach up to get a player, because that's a guy that you identify as, he's not going to be around at 18, for example, if we're talking about the Flames. That's a player that you have absolutely zoned in on and are not confident whatsoever that he's going to continue to slide. So if that's the scenario, I could see it happening. At the same time, I'd be just as okay at 18 based on how the tiers are from my perspective, because to me, there's still going to be a player that, you know, potentially is a second line guy, but has that first line upside as well.
Is the player that you would move up for where the Flames are?
No.
Is it Roger McQueen?
No, it's not.
It's not?
No. I'm
are you down on the player?
I'm less optimistic than others.
Okay. That's very fair.
I get the idea. I get the thought process behind it. McQueen for us fell to number 11 on our rankings. 6'5", 197-pound center. I get it. This is a guy that has a lot of the skills that you look at and the size that you look at and go, what could this guy be at the NHL level? His injury, although not the same as what Caden Lindstrom had, is my understanding, has been problematic. I do wonder if the way he generates offense at the WHL level, and again, this is a tough year to evaluate him in particular, because he was injured basically the entire season, that limits the amount you're able to train, particularly with a back injury. And we saw a lot of flyby with McQueen this year. His skating, I think it gets overblown in terms of people being down on it, but it's certainly not in the upper echelon of the draft. But because of, from our perspective, the lack of training, the lack of conditioning, the lack of, you know, elite skating ability, there was a lot of flyby in turns as opposed to stops and starts, and his ability to impact all over the ice is limited by the fact that he's kind of taking the long path. And if you watch a lot of his highlights, a lot of, you know, you go onto YouTube and this, and well, the one thing that will get me, and this is a pet peeve and I apologize for the side tangent, you don't scout off of YouTube highlight packs.
Right.
That is not the way about identifying what a player is. But if you go look at some highlight clips, there's a lot of bang, bang plays that he's a part of. And you go, oh, look at these small area games or look at this quick touch or everything. That's great when it works. How many times doesn't it work? How many times are you not seeing in those highlight packs, not being in the right position, or, you know, the pass gets fumbled, or, you know, from our perspective, he wasn't able to generate offense in the way that you necessarily need to at higher levels more consistently. So that was some of the issues that we have with him. He's certainly an intriguing package. He's certainly one of those guys that if he had a full healthy season and was probably, to be honest, would be able to address at least some of our concerns in that. But I guess to answer your question, to circle back, is he a guy you trade up for? Depends on where it is and what the cost is.
Like, I'm thinking,
if he had a healthier run, he'd be top 10. So if you're moving up four spots from, say, 18 to 15,
and that's a worthy
gamble on McQueen there for me. But if we're talking jumping to 8 or 7 and paying that acquisition cost to move up, that's something I would shy away from a little bit.
Like, if you're going through and teams are shying away from him, and, you know, Columbus has their eye on a D-man and they think they can get that D-man at 18, and all of a sudden they call the Flames and they say, hey, we'd be cool moving down. Would you wanna jump up here? Would moving from 18 to 14 and a deal with Columbus, if McQueen's still there, would that be a worthy gamble? That's kind of my thought process, because based on everything you hear, could Roger McQueen drop? Yeah. And thus, you have him ranked 11 on the FC hockey board.
Yep.
Could he still be there at 14, 15? I think conceivably,
I think
that
realistically,
could happen.
Yeah, because you look at the names that we have behind him as well. We have Cameron Reed, who I think is an absolute wild card of a defenseman in this draft. This is not a great draft for defensemen once you get past Schaefer at number 1, where we have him. and the likely number one pick in the draft. Cameron Reed to me is a guy that's a wild card. We still have Brady Martin at 14. We've heard whispers and in talking to teams and just generally conversing in the hockey sphere. He's a guy that could very easily go top 10, if not top 7.
Okay.
Then we get into another couple of defensemen in Jackson Smith and Radim Mirka, who are, again, the defense portion of this is the wild card for me in the top half of the first round. So, yeah, is there a situation where McQueen slides? Yeah. Is there a situation where there's a guy that I feel just as comfortable with in and around that range that might make me want to hesitate trading up? I can see that scenario, yeah, too, depending on how the defensemen fall.
Just a couple of maybe rapid-fire ones for you before we hit the text line. I got text. If you're listening live, 960-960, questions about the draft when it comes to the Flames at 18 and 31 or 32, when it comes to the class, when it comes to trading up, when it comes to individual players. Text at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you. We'll do the second half of this hour, taking some texts and firing them at Vickers. Any guys outside of, say, the top 60, some later round guys that you're interested in, some of the players that, you know, maybe we don't have as much of an eye on right now that we should be perhaps keeping an eye on in your books?
To me, LJ Mooney from the National Team Development Program is going to be, it's just going to be absolutely fascinating where he goes.
Okay.
He is an I don't even know who to compare him to. Like, part of me wanted Cam Atkinson. Part of me wanted, you know, just pick any sub 5'8" player that's managed to carve out a role in the NHL. That's what I think Mooney can be. Now, he's listed at 5'6", 146. We had two guys at the U18s where Mooney absolutely shredded, dominated, whatever adjective you want to use. They are not convinced that Mooney's even 5'6". This might be a 5'4", 5'5" guy that gets the old bump in the vitals. But he has all-world skill. And could he be a first-liner? Yeah. Is he ranked outside the top 60? We have him at 85. Yeah, because he's roughly 5'5" and 140 pounds. And how easy is that to translate? But for me, if I'm an organization, and it's easy for me to say because it's literally not my job on the line. If Mooney gets selected high and doesn't make the NHL, I'm still managing editor at FC Hockey. I'm not losing my job. But he's a player that I would sort of slam the fist on the table and go, even if he has a 10% chance of hitting his potential and the other guy we're looking at in that slot has a 50% chance of being a third or fourth liner, give me that 10% shot at a guy being an impact player, especially when you get beyond the top 60.
Who are some of your personal favorites in this draft?
Cameron Reed, pardon me. He's only 5'11", 190 pounds. Man, can he move. Man, can he skate. And I'm not saying he's going to be Quinn Hughes. I'm not saying he's going to be Cale Makar, but he does everything so well other than shoot the puck because he just doesn't have the strength yet. But he's a guy that I personally fought for to get to number 13 on our list. If he was 6'3", there'd be a real discussion over whether Matthew Schaefer or he is going number one, in my opinion. That's how good he is at every other facet of the game. And he's not going to be a big hitter, obviously, but he's sound positionally, really good gaps, can skate the puck out of trouble, can, you know, start the breakout, can add a wave, can quarterback a power play. He's one of those guys that is a personal favorite of mine. Another one is Cole McKinney from the National Team Development Program.
Okay.
I see a lot of, and take this how you will, audience. I see a lot of Morgan Frost in his game, where an elite centerman kind of moves and navigates the ice the same way, is able to distribute the same way, and just from a general stylistic standpoint, he's one of those guys that I think I'm very curious to see where he goes because, he's not necessarily going to be a first-line player, but he plays both sides of special teams. Again, absolutely dominant at the faceoff circle. Again, not blessed with size at 6'190". Not bad, not great. But I'm just curious how his entire game sort of is seen by an NHL team. Because it wouldn't surprise me if he goes top 15. It would very much surprise me if he goes top 10. But wouldn't surprise me if he goes top 15. It wouldn't surprise me if he's like number 34 or number 35 off the board on day two.
And then maybe on to wrap it up before we hit the text line, got a bunch of texts to get to at 960-960, so I want to leave some time this hour to do that. But maybe some – so you are the purveyor, the overseer, the grand poobah at FC Hockey. So you're kind of like you're the man at the top of the mountain, and then you're overseeing.
I like to think we all run parallel. We're all on the same tier.
Okay. Well, you put the guide together, and you've got all your contributors that come together, and these rankings that you have, which as comprehensive as they get. I mean, the rankings go all the way down to number 300.
Yes.
So 300 ranked players eligible for this 2025 NHL draft, and it's kind of a consensus ranking of all your contributors. You come together and put this. So you personally, are there guys that FC Hockey has ranked that you would put higher on your list and or lower on your list?
Oh, that's a good question. The one that jumps out first for me, I think, would be Justin Carbonneau. He's a right winger out of the queue. We have him at 18. I think from a pure talent standpoint, he's a top 10 player. I liken him a little bit to Nylander in Toronto. He is completely sort of devoid of anything center ice back at this stage of the game. But like when I look at my philosophy and how I personally rank things, like where does this player stand in terms of actually making an impact in the NHL? Can he be a top liner? Is he going to be a second line guy, or is he going to be a bottom six? And there's a lot of leeway in what you call a bottom six player. But like for Carbonneau, he's either going to be a top six player or not a player at all. None of his skills translate to being in the bottom six, at least unless he reinvents himself along the way somewhat. But he has such, from my perspective, game-breaking offensive talent, both as a shooter, as a playmaker. I think his skating is a little underrated as well. I say that in another caveat is all these players, for the most part, outside of WHL guys, and outside of the Ivan Holinka at the beginning of the season, I see on video, and it's a different ball game scouting on video than it is in person. That's why we have so many scouts across the world, is because we want guys primarily in rinks, because those views, from my perspective, are just that much more valuable.
Agreed.
But Carbonneau, oh man, like I see such Nylander vibes in him that he's a guy that I would have in my top 10. The other one that I would have said, except for we did get him high, is Desnoyers out of Moncton as well. He's a guy, I don't know if you remember, but like, I want to say a month and a half ago, or maybe it was right at the tail end of the season, we were talking draft, and I'm like, this guy is, you know, somewhere he's going to fall between, somewhere between a Couturier and a Bergeron, and I don't know where he's going to go. And he played injured for much of the latter part of the season, and he was still producing. He was still doing all those things to the point where I'm like, I think I underrated how good he is offensively. And when you get that two-way tag or that Bergeron Barkov-esque sort of tag, it's like, okay, well, you're sacrificing some offense to play that full 200-foot game. Now he's got it, but we've got him at four, so that's not really a fair, it's not really a fair name to toss out in that sense. Just trying to go through a list, but I think Carbonneau and Desnoyers would probably be the two that I would have pointed to, but we did manage to get Desnoyers elevated.
Okay. Aaron Vickers on Twitter, at AA Vickers. FC Hockey, which is the guide we're talking about, put together by our Aaron Vickers. They're on Twitter, at FC Hockey. You can go get the 2025 FC Hockey NHL Draft Guide at NHLEntryDraft.com right now. Use the code SN960 at checkout, and you're getting 40% off of this year's guide. There's a printable version, and then the tablet version, or the PDF
optimized
version,
for
it's honestly gorgeous.
We've got a great design team behind us.
Really, really nice. If you got yourself a new iPad, it is perfect for scrolling on there. So once again, NHLEntryDraft.com is the website. Go hit get the guide 2025, and at checkout, use the code SN960 for 40% off. Your questions on the text line coming up in just minutes. Get them in now at 960-960 if you're listening live. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Vickers on this hour of Flames Talk on a Monday. It is your comprehensive 2025 FC Hockey NHL Draft Preview. Of course, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, also the overseer of FC Hockey. Get the 2025 FC Hockey NHL Draft Guide at NHLEntryDraft.com. Use the promo code SN960 for 40% off your order. And that's what we're working off of right now. You and I have talked. Now let's get to the text line at 960-960. Lots of questions to get to here. Starting with this one, plain and simple. Will Roger McQueen drop to number 18?
No.
No? So no. If the Flames did have eyes on Brandon's Roger McQueen, they would have to trade up to get him in your mind.
Yeah, and I think if we're talking about a situation where he's falling to the mid-teens, there might be multiple teams looking to make a move to select him. Again, he's a value pick in that range, especially when you consider he would be one of those guys that has a more definite path to being a top-line player, whereas a couple others might need to do a little bit of work to get there. But I would imagine if he's falling to 15-ish, I feel like there would or should be multiple teams looking to trade up in okay. order to snag him.
This from Harold in Diamond Valley or Turner Black. Which one do we like better? Diamond Valley?
I like Diamond Valley.
Yeah, I do too. That's why they went with that officially.
Touche.
Harold in Diamond Valley says, do you think Craig doubles up on centers with 18th and 32nd, or do they go best overall player off the board no matter the position with one of those picks? Who do you hope for? Here's where this is what I believe, and I'm curious as to how you'd react. In some way, shape, or form, they have got to leave Friday night with a new center iceman, whether that is trading up, trading down, trading up big time, getting another pick, whatever. I think they have to come away with a first-round center iceman, not a first-round winger that maybe could be a center. It's got to be a first-round center iceman. That, to me, has to be the big push in this year's draft. I really do believe that, knowing how lacking the organization is. So, and it has to be, in my mind, combined with the best player available. But if that means trading up to get him, then I think they have to do that.
The fortunate thing is that as much as we talked about how I view or don't view the 2025 class, 12 of our first 21 players ranked are centers. There's going to be a center that makes sense at 18. It's just a matter of whether or not the Flames like him or not. And when I say 12 out of 21, that's partially disingenuous because we run off of what Central Scouting places on positioning. Like, for example, Anton Frondell out of Djurgården is listed as a center. I think he took, outside of the U18s, I think he took 4 draws this season. Now he's playing up in a men's league, but he's a player that, for all intents and purposes, should be listed as a winger. But even when you take a look at some of those nitpicky type things, the semantics that I'll argue, you're still talking about at least 50% of the guys being centers. So there is going to be a center that makes sense for the Flames at 18 if they don't make a move. It's just a matter of, do they like whatever is in that center tier or not?
Right.
It's a good year to need a center.
Let me ask you this one. I like this one because I'm really interested in the prospects of the Flames taking a look at Ryabkin with one of their picks in the top 60. So this text says, has Demidov flipped the script on the Russian factor in the draft? How much has what Demidov did and the fact that he came over in his first year, even though he didn't start the year in Montreal, came over and the Habs and Demidov's camp found a way to get him out of the KHL and bring him to North America. How much does that change the paradigm when we're talking here?
I don't think it does at all, and let me explain. And you can even use Michkov in this example. I know it wasn't as immediate, but Rabkin is already in North America. He played for Muskegon. He was in the United States Hockey League. He left Russia because he wasn't in a good position or a good environment to develop. He was too good for the junior league and not good enough to earn any sort of regular time. And when I say regular time, we're talking 18-year-olds in the KHL. Regular time is 6 minutes. He was in that weird gap where there's no sense in dominating in the MHL, the junior league in Russia, and he wasn't good enough to play a regular shift in the KHL. So he came over mid-season. I think it was like December 30th or 31st. He came over to the USHL. I don't think it's as complicated as it is anymore to get your high-profile Russians over. But I also think that Rabkin isn't necessarily the same type of player as a Michkov or as a Demidov right. in terms of the high end. I don't see, I say this respectfully to him because we graded him out above average across the board, but he's not elite at skating. He's not elite at puck handling. He's not elite at shooting. So where Demidov was a sort of a surefire top five guy, some organizations or some outlets would have had him as high as two or three. Michkov the same way, and he only slid down in the rankings because there was a lot of there's a lot of concern that he only wanted to go to one or two teams. Mm-hmm. So a lot of teams, a lot of organizations backed
shied
off.
Shied away because of that.
But well, yeah. You got a player trying to call his shot, and in that sense, you have the Russian factor working against him too because it's, well, I'll just take my ball and stay home. I don't think Rabkin falls into the conversation in terms of the quality or type of prospect that those two others are.
This one coming from Nash on Southland, who is wondering about what do you think about Bryce Pickford out of Medicine Hat? So Pickford will be entering his 19-year-old season. So as an 18-year-old, in his 18-year-old season with Medicine Hat, who came agonizingly close to ending the Western League's drought at the Memorial Cup. I feel, just as a quick side note, I was thinking about this while watching that game on Sunday. I feel so bad for a team like Medicine Hat, who accomplished so much this year, and yet their season ends with a kick to the gut. Even though they did so well. Gavin McKenna and Andrew Bashaw comes back. Shout out Garrison Pub. And Caden Lindstrom comes back. And, you know, Bryce Pickford's a point-of-game defenseman on the back end for them, so on and so forth. And they do so much, they roll to a Western League championship. And instead, the last thing that they'll remember is losing in the Memorial Cup final. Not to say that I dislike the Memorial Cup. I think it's the best possible way to do what they're doing. And yet I always feel bad for the Western League teams that get there. And this Tigers team was a wagon. And we shouldn't look at what the Tigers just did as a failure. And yet I bet you if you ask Gavin McKenna or Andrew Bashaw right now how they're feeling, they're not banking on the Western League championship. I always just feel bad for him. That's my side note. Anyway, what do you think about Bryce Pickford?
We have him in the 200s. He was a point-per-game defenseman, as you mentioned, this past season. He's got average enough size at 6 foot. He very much skews offensively. Our concern is more on the defensive side of the puck. In 2024, we had him at number 207. Obviously went undrafted. Otherwise, this question would not exist. He's just a player that a team would take a late-round flyer on in hopes of sort of molding sort of the deficiencies in his game to see if they can bring it up to a pro-level standard.
Highest scoring D-man on the Tigers this year, and entering his 19-year-old season after a point-per-game year as an 18-year-old, I'm really interested to see what the point totals look like in his 19-year-old season.
Well, and the good news is he got an expanded look, too. Like, you don't get to a Memorial Cup final without having a lot of eyes on you. So for better or worse, there are going to be 32 teams that got the extended look at Pickford.
This reads, what do you think of trading both first-round picks for the Flames to get blue-chip prospects from someone else who is further along? Only thing I would say about that is if you've got a blue-chip prospect that you believe is a blue-chipper and is going to be an impact NHLer, why move on from that player for another lottery ticket? Well, would be my only question. Like, from a Flame standpoint, sure, but from the other team, I'm less convinced why they would do that.
Well, and the other team is now 1 or 2 years behind the curve in terms of development for their shiny new toy that they picked with the first rounder you're trading for their blue chipper. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I think I don't want to say you're stretching the blue chip term. I guess it depends on what you versus I feel. Semantics, here it comes, what a blue chipper is. I don't know if I necessarily would quantify an 18th overall pick in this draft, depending on who's available, who falls, as a true blue chipper. I kind of refer to those or reserve those for, you know, a top 10 pick or a guy that has had a little bit longer runway as is in this example, and they've elevated their status from where they were drafted to a higher tier. And just looking at the board, I'm like, I don't necessarily like to toss out a blue chip. So if you're a team that already has a blue chip prospect and you're trading him and his 2 years of development for a player that you might not see in that same tier, doesn't make sense for the other side.
Okay. Since there's so much attention on tracking players from pre-junior age, what's the likelihood of getting a Nieuwendyk, Bergeron, or Kucherov-level player in the second round anymore?
I mean, it still happens. It'll still happen in every draft class, and that's because development isn't linear. The player you are in Bantam or, you know, U16, U17.
As much as scouting's huge, it's still, you talk to Todd Button.
It's
still a crapshoot. There's still a certain amount of luck and fortune that goes into drafting too.
If your team hits on 25% of your picks, you are the best drafting team in the NHL. Like, you're still losing 3 out of every 4 consistently and would be one of the best, if not the best, drafting team. And again, I said it earlier in the hour, so much goes into the moment you're drafted and beyond. It's not as if you're a finished product at 18. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 are absolute key development years. And in a lot of ways, that's physical development as well as skill development as well as mental development. And when you're picking a player at 18, you don't have the magic mirror. I'm trying to think. You don't have the magic eight ball. You don't have whatever magic I'm trying to portray across the radio waves here.
Very spooky magic.
To absolutely see what an 18-year-old is going to be at 23.
Yeah.
It's a crapshoot. You're taking all the information you have at present when this player is 18 or, 17 or 19, some cases 20 when you're drafting overagers, and you're trying to project what they will be 5 years out, but you don't know. It's the old Moneyball speech. You don't know. You sit there across the table and you say you know, but you don't know.
You don't.
You'd use the information you have to try to project.
You just don't know.
And you hope. And that's why you're going to see seventh round. That's why you see Dustin Wolf hit. That's why you see Johnny Gaudreau, Nikita Kucherov, so on and so forth. You can't tell me that 30 teams looked at a Kucherov and went, we know exactly what he's going
to
be.
Well, you don't have to.
And we're going to let him slide.
You don't have to look too far. Like, you only have to go back 4 years now. Last time, a pretty solid guy that teams have been salivating over went in the second round. And that's Stankoven, who was a massive part of Carolina's run to game 5 of the Eastern Conference Final. Like, Carolina, come on. Can we do something more than get to Conference Final? That's another topic for another day. But Stankoven goes to Dallas at 47 overall in 2021, and he's a key part of the Mikko Rantanen trade that got Rantanen to Dallas. So, you know, that's not that long ago that a pretty, pretty impressive looking prospect who clearly would have been a first round pick went in the second round. And, you know, you go back to Brock Faber the year before in the second round to Los Angeles. Brock Faber is a bona fide top pairing defenseman in this league.
At 22.
That's a top 5 pick, but he went in the second round that year. So they still happen.
And there's a lot of reasons why guys fall, whether it's injury and not getting enough sample size, scouting them, whether it's size, whether there's perceived attitude issues in the player that get worked out. Like, there's a million reasons why a guy can fall. And if he can correct whatever reason that is, suddenly he looks like a steal.
Yeah. So I just, like, you don't have to go back that far to find these guys that are still popping in the second round. I'm only looking at the second round when we're having these conversations. This says, hey, was wondering why Cullen Potter's so high on your list, and if you see number one center potential in him, as a lot of other lists have him a little bit later on.
I think we see him as top line potential. I won't necessarily say center. I mean, he's sitting at 5'10", 170 pounds, and there's not a whole lot of, top six centers in the NHL with that stature that are able to go up against, a night in, night out, bigger centermen on the other side that are perceived as franchise. But his skill, absolutely. Again, you look at how is this player going to impact a game at the NHL level? That's the ultimate question in terms of coming up with our list. And what is the likelihood of him doing it? Those are the two factors. Potter has a very complete offensive game without being devoid of the defensive side. Like, he's one of the best skaters in the draft, and we're not just talking top end speed. We're talking about four-way mobility, agility, all sorts of those sort of, I don't want to call them cliche words, but cliche phrases when we talk about skating. Like, he's not just darty. He can win the small area races. He can move laterally really well, and then he can just blow by you as well. One of the things he does best, which I'll be curious to see how it translates to a higher levels, is he'll just burn the zone, take a defenseman wide, take the puck around behind the net, and sort of set up the offensive play. There is a lot of quality skills, and he thinks the game well too. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of dynamic elements to his offensive game without being devoid of the responsibilities that come with being a center. But he's one of those players that's listed as a C that we probably see being more of a winger at the next level. But he's got quite an intriguing set of skills, and that's why he's in our top 10.
This text, the text finishes with thoughts on Cole Reschne, Mason West, and Ivan Ryabkin as the first three Flames picks. The Flames right now, as it stands, as we're talking on June 2nd, the Flames hold number 18, one of 31 or 32, and then number 54 in the top 60. So
they're talking 18, 32, and then the 50s
in
pick.
Some order.
Okay, so they're not advocating Mason West as the as a first rounder in that case.
No, Mason West, by the way, just finished with Fargo in the USHL.
Yeah, spent the season with Edina in Minnesota. His point totals were good, but not blow you away impressive. He's a dual sport athlete. He, if I'm not mistaken, he earlier in the week committed to a career in hockey as opposed to football. He's 6'6". He is massive. He is a very raw player. He's going to be one of those guys that
Edina High. Hey, that's
yeah. It's a little bit of a program.
The Flames have drafted at least one guy from Edina High, Paul Ranheim. He was an Edina High guy.
Yeah, he's going to be one of those longer-term prospects. Where do we have him? That's actually a really good question. Not to focus on Mason West, but we have him at 56, in the ballpark.
And we've also talked a lot about Reschne and Ryabkin as well. So that's a new name that we're kind of talking about.
Ryabkin, I'm not, again, like, I wouldn't have, I think I ran a mock draft yesterday. We have a mock draft builder at FC Hockey, NHLEntryDraft.com, and I do believe I took Ryabkin at that 31 pick. I just, like, he's, to me, he feels, and I might be wrong in this, and again, but this is like a collective as a team. We have two guys that scout the USHL. We've got him down somewhere around 48. Like, he was a player that was legit last August, a top 10 pick, and it didn't work out in Russia, and he gets moved to the USHL, and then you're able to maybe better compare him to some of the options that are available, particularly with that national team development program. And he was just a player that continually got pushed down our rankings. And again, he's not a Demidov, he's not a Michkov. He's more well-rounded than them, but to me, he doesn't pop off the page, for lack of a better hockey metaphor, to put him back in our first round. Do I think he goes in the first round? Probably. Is that where we have him? No, because it's just, at the end of the day, okay, how does what he is now translate, or where can he build up his game to translate to be a top six player? And we just sort of see more of that third line type of guy that's, you know, he'll still be able to contribute in all situations. He's still a guy that you know, you're not parking him on the bench for the last 2 minutes of a game. But where does this thing pop?
Okay. Got to go pretty quick on these last three. Okay. Guys, how difficult is it to scout players on bad teams? For example, would a kid like Nathan Bem be ranked higher if he was on a stronger team? Or is the opposite true, that it's harder to scout these kids on strong teams?
I don't think it's an advantage or a disadvantage. When you're on a poorer team, you're put in more situations. You're getting more minutes, so your game is out there. Now you're playing against higher competition as well, so you're also showcasing yourself against top lines or shutdown lines and top pair defensemen and things of that sort. It's six of one, half dozen of the other. At times it can inflate you, I think, a little bit. But on the flip side, if you're not performing in those situations, it can hinder you as well.
Peyton says, good afternoon, gents. If the Flames package their two first rounders together, how far do you think they could realistically move up? Like, not into the top 10.
And at that
five,
point, it's
six,
not
seven spots is kind of what I'd be
at
thinking.
At that point, for me, it's not, based on where I see the ledges, it's not necessarily worth it.
And finally, Brad in Lethbridge, Thoughts on the Flames moving up to draft Brady Martin and then potentially drafting Philip Ekberg in the second?
Brady Martin's one of my favorites.
Okay.
I do feel like you need to trade into the top 10 to get him. Again, we've got him outside the top 10, but he just, especially with what we've seen from Sam Bennett in the playoffs and playoff Sam Bennett, Brady Martin is one of those guys where he might only produce 50 points in the regular season, might be a second liner, but then you flip the switch to playoffs and he's a guy you win with. So I don't necessarily think there's going to be an option to trade up and get him, but okay, from a personal level, going back to the Hlinka, and I personally like him better than Jake O'Brien, who we've got at number 8, I believe. But I just don't see the scenario where it's going to make sense. And you just, again, if we're talking moving up 5 picks and he happens to be in and around that 12, 13, 14, so be it. But I don't see it happening.
You've got Ekberg number 80 on your list from Ottawa in the OHL as well.
Yeah, he is one of those players that had a really strong second half and had a really, really, really strong U18 to boost his stock. But again, you got to take the whole sample. You can't just take the good and be like, look what he is when he was great. Okay, well, where was that for a lot of the year?
Good stuff. One more time. The 2025 FC Hockey NHL Draft Guide is available for you right now at NHLEntryDraft.com. Click on the draft guide, hit purchase, and then use the promo code SN960 for 40% off of your purchase. One more time, it's the FC Hockey 2025 Draft Guide available for you at NHLDraft.com. Aaron Vickers doing double duty. He's our Flames Talk co-host and our FC Hockey Draft expert, your comprehensive 2025 NHL Draft Preview. Now in the books, says Sportsnet 960, the Fan is excited to be a part of a brand new initiative. It is our citywide 50-50, and it's all in support of Brown Bagging for Calgary's Kids. Citywide raffle where we're hanging out with all of our other stations in the building, and hey, you've got an opportunity to win a big pot. 50% of that pot could be going to you. For over 30 years, Brown Bagging for Calgary Kids has been dedicated to ensuring every child in Calgary has access to the food they need to thrive. They've been providing nutritious lunches to over 7,800 kids across Calgary every single school day. Tickets are available at citywide5050.com, starting at $5 for one ticket, all the way up to $100 for 500 tickets and a bunch of ledges in between. One more time, the website citywide5050.com, or text the word money to 960960. We'll send you that link. It is the Citywide 5050 for Brown Bagging for Calgary's Kids. Raffle license number 731699.